As we bailed, Rob pointed to the driver's side mirror. Glass, take a last look and say goodbye. Simon looked, then glanced at each of us, unsure. He looked back to Rob. Trust me. Rob smiled. We took off for the mall entrance. Simon tore his eyes away from his reflection and followed, gathering speed as he caught up. The Galleria's 3 floors of upscale stores, plus 4-star hotels, were covered with a glass dome. Trees grew in mammoth pots, fountains sprayed in arches, and the centerpiece was an ice rink, the biggest of the few on the Texas Gulf Coast. We gave Glass's credit card a healthy workout. We traveled from store to store to store, level to level, piling up khaki pants, pleated and cuffed, measured to break at the tops of his shoes. We got button-down cotton shirts in stripes, plaids, and solids. Jeans, vertical-striped rugby jerseys, boat shoes and loafers, sweats, running shoes, a leather bomber jacket, and dark, crew-necked sweaters completed the haul. "One more thing," Simon said. He barged into a sporting goods store and passed aisles of fishing rods and tennis rackets. He snagged a dark blue nylon backpack. "This too," he said, smiling and proud. "Good." Rob slung the pack by one strap over Simon's left shoulder. "Remember, one shoulder." Simon all but wagged his tail. "Sure, one strap." "Now the hair," Bobster said. We cruised to a place called Scissorhands. Shiny chrome and scads of mirrors announced a salon that catered to the young and fashionable, rather than blue-haired geezer ladies. We flipped through magazines and watched MTV in the waiting room until the nose and eyebrow-pierced receptionist said, "Dragon will see you now." "Dragon?" Dragon eyeballed us and pointed to Simon. "This must be the client." He seated and sheeted Glass before any of us could manage a sound. Dragon had blue spiked hair and a tattoo that crawled from his neck to his cheek. Rob said nothing weird. Neat. Preppy short, you know. The stylist rolled his eyes. "Come back in 40 minutes, he commanded. "Y'all make me nervous. Shoo, shoo." He flapped his manicured hands at us and squinted at Glass's hair with deadly intent. He parted it to the left, to the right, and spied us watching. He placed one hand on his hip and spoke to our reflections. "I won't do a thing until you leave. I must concentrate." We took Simon's packages to the car and went to get root beer and chocolate chunk cookies. Hanging over the rails, we watched the ice skaters circle, twirl, and leap across the rink below us. The female skaters wore tight, stretchy dresses with short, flippy skirts. "Think of all those hours of practice," I said. "Perfect control," said Rob. "Cool moves," said Bobster. "Great legs. Great butts," said Coop. "That's what we meant," Rob said. "Voila," the stylist trilled. He spun the chair and whisked the drape with a flourish, unveiling Simon. Amazing. Glass's hair lay against his head from a perfectly straight part, and he had 2 separate eyebrows. I thinned out the brows and pulled the hair forward. He has such a high forehead. Dragon chuckled. "Now you can see his lovely eyes." Bobster punched Rob. "His lovely eyes." "Glass, my man." Rob walked around the chair, nodding and smiling. "This is getting easier by the minute." Simon popped out of the chair, checked his reflection, then slapped his hands together. "What happens now?" I got home late. We toured the Galleria until Simon's credit card threatened a meltdown. Simon paid for dinner at Outback Steakhouse and the latest action flick. He carried packages into his house and found a note taped to his bedroom door. Out to dinner and theater. No signature. Simon pitched it into a wastebasket. "Coop," Simon wheezed. "I have something for you." He picked up a black notebook from his desk and thrust it at Coop. "What's this?" Coop grunted. "A notebook, Conan," Bobster said. "Your notebook," Simon said. "No, that can't be mine." "It is. I organized it and took out old papers. I think some of them were from the first grade." We stared. Glass had made a joke. "I kept the old stuff, in case you wanted it. But I divided the notebook into sections for each subject and subdivided it into notes, assignments, and completed work. And there's a clip-in dictionary in back and a plastic pouch for note cards, you know, for your research paper." Simon flipped labeled tabs. "Clean paper here. A write-in calendar is in front. You can mark due dates for your work." Simon pulled note cards from the pouch. "I separated bib cards from note cards and put them in chronological order. That's the best way to approach your paper." He tucked the cards back into the pouch. Coop turned the notebook over in his huge hands and looked up at Simon. Coop thrust out his paw, grasped Simon's pudgy one, and shook. "I appreciate it." Simon colored. "Rob gave me the idea." Coop looked at Rob, who gave him a thumbs up. Coop turned back to Glass. "Let's start running tomorrow. Meet me at the track, and we'll rev it up." Simon stammered a yes. "I'll meet you too," Rob said. "No need, Rob," said Coop. "I can handle Simon's exercise program." "I'll be there, Coop." Coop backed off a step. "No sweat, Rob. I just thought, you're not supposed to think, Coop. Don't forget it." My stomach clutched. Rob had never said anything like that before, especially to Coop. Rob held up both hands. "Shit. I'm really sorry. It didn't come out right. I just meant, let me do the thinking, Coop. You have your scholarship to worry about. I don't want to add to your workload." Rob put his hand on Coop's shoulder. "And you know me," he said. "I have to be in the middle of everything. Why don't you call me an asshole and then forgive me?" He gave Coop his aw shucks smile. Coop rubbed his nose and looked around at the rest of us. Then he cleared his throat and said, "You're forgiven." He paused. "Asshole. Why don't we hit the road and let Simon get some sleep?" Rob turned back to Glass. "The track at 7. Simon's eyebrows almost bunched into one again. "In the morning?" It was after 1 o'clock when I let myself into the house. As I locked the front door and set the alarm, the door to my father's study opened. "Young, please come in. I need to speak with you." My father's voice was soft and easy, but I learned long ago not to trust it. It was a tool he forged to reassure his patients, but there were glass shards and hunks of concrete hidden under its silky surface. I went in. "Sit down, Young." Dad always smelled of soap and authority. He lowered himself into a tufted leather desk chair that swiveled and rocked. His massive desk was clear of clutter or dust. Tipping back his chair, Dad tapped his chin with a gold fountain pen. I dropped into a maroon leather club chair. As I sank into its soft cushions, my father seemed to tower over me. "Sit up straight, Young. You know you shouldn't slouch." I hitched up and sat with my back rigid. "That's better." Dad laid down his pen and cleared his throat. It seems there's a problem. I didn't say a word. I spoke to Ms. Connolly today. My counselor? Yes. I called her to see if I could get a printout of class rankings. He retrieved the pen and tapped a staccato beat. They don't tabulate those until spring. I'm aware of that, Young. But I wanted to see where you stand at this point. See who your competition is. Dad, I'm not going to be valedictorian. Not with that attitude, you're not. Nor... He leaned forward. Nor with your present schedule of classes for next semester. I lowered my gaze to my clenched hands. It seems you've made a few unauthorized changes in your course selections. Friday, I had gone to Ms. Connolly and dropped the second semester of advanced bio and signed up for creative writing. Traded frogs for fiction. I knew Dad would find out eventually, but I didn't think it would be this soon. Look, Dad, I can explain. He interrupted, his voice as sharp as a scalpel. Unless you can explain how writing amateurish fiction can further your progress in your chosen field, I don't want to hear it. That's just it. My voice rose. It's not my chosen field. Young, medicine has been the destiny of every... I did the unspeakable. I interrupted my father. I'm not cut out for it, Dad. I can't even dissect a frog without puking my guts up. I lower your voice and kindly sit down. I hadn't realized I was standing. I shut my mouth and sat. Young, you will go to medical school. You will graduate in the top 5 of your class. You will drop that writing class and take advanced biology, and you will do it Monday at 8:00. I attempted to stare him down, but I didn't have the balls. I dropped my eyes again and nodded. Good. I'm glad we came to an understanding. His pen tapped against the desk like a heartbeat. You may go, Young. Get some sleep. I stood up, walked to the door, and turned to speak. Close the door behind you, my father said. I did what I was told. I closed the door to my room with care. No slamming doors in this house. My head strummed and my hands fisted and opened, fisted and opened. I paced the room trying to calm down, trying not to scream, trying not to curse my father at the top of my lungs, trying not to cry. I grabbed the fat decorator pillow at the end of my bed and planted my fist deep. The pillow was my father's face, and I smashed his mouth while he told me what to do and how to do it. I pounded the pillow until I cooled out enough to write. A new story with a new ending might help me sleep. Chapter 8. I knew Young wanted to be a writer. He didn't let me read the stuff he wrote in high school, and I haven't read his book. That would take me back to a time I don't want to revisit. But Young did a good thing when he assigned his advance and royalties to Coop. And the best part was that Young did it on his own. This time he knew what was right, and he did it. Ronna Perry. My father never read my short stories. Coop and Bob had both asked, but their interest was more a matter of friendship than literature. I dodged them. But I gave Rob one of my stories the first time he asked. And he got it. He zoned in on the heart of the story and found the thing I needed the reader to find. So I gave him another one. Its title was Touch. The first lines were, His father never touched him, and Mark hungered for it. A hug with man's smell, cigarettes, aftershave, and sweat. A clap on the back that signaled pride and relationship. Mark wore that hunger like a bandage, and the young camp counselor pulled the bandage from his wounds just as he removed the clothes from Mark's body. Sitting in the blue and brown plaid chair in my bedroom, I felt increasingly tense as Rob read the story. When he finished, he didn't look away. "You're a writer. You'll be a great writer." He arranged the pages, aligning the corners and sides. "There's something else you need to know." I looked at him, wanting to know if he understood. "You're not, well, what you think. I can tell from this story that you're confused about it." My pulse hammered in my ears. When it happened, I just let it happen. I looked at Rob. "Doesn't that mean that I'm..." There was no revulsion on Rob's face, nor pity. "You know, when you were a kid, your father undressed you and put you in your pajamas. He sat on your bed. If you had a bad dream, you might have slept with him. He sat on his lap while he read picture books." I nodded. My dad was disappointed in me, but he hadn't been a monster. He'd done all those things. "So," Rob continued, "how does a kid know when that stuff turns into something not right?" "But there was more," I said. "Maybe. But you listened to a counselor you trusted, and he told you it was right." I had told myself this stuff, but hearing it from Rob made it real. "You trusted someone you shouldn't have. That's the only mistake you made." I lowered my eyes so he wouldn't see the tears of relief and of gratitude. I wondered if Rob shared secrets with Bob and Coop. Had he found and patched a hole in them as he had in me? He had taken the thing that terrified me and chased it under a rock where it belonged. He was my hero, my savior, my friend. The phone rang Sunday, a little after noon. I answered it in the kitchen as I made a sandwich. "Young, Coop, come on over to Glasses." "Why?" I cradled the receiver between my ear and shoulder and swiped mayonnaise on the bread. "'Cause we want you to see something." "We?" I licked the knife and tossed it into the sink. "Me and Glass. I'm over here now." Coop was at Glasses on his own? I piled on turkey, cheese, pickles, lettuce, and tomato. "Young, you still there?" "Yeah," I said, smashing down the top layer of bread. "See what?" I took a bite. "Something slick. Can you get over here?" "Sure." "Don't tell Rob you're coming, okay?" "Why?" "You saw him last night. He gets crabbed if we do something with Simon when he's not running the show." I knew Rob was with Blair today, so it didn't make much diff. But I felt a little guilty somehow. "See you in 20. Simon answered his doorbell wearing the navy blue sweats and running shoes bought the day before. "Come in. Coop's in my study, working on the computer." I'd have sooner believed the sun was shining out of my dick. "He's what?" I followed Simon. I heard squawks and booms and static-filled explosions along with whines and shrieks and rat-a-tat machine gun sounds. Over all this, I heard Coop. "All right, got another one. Way to go, Coop." "Yay, me!" Turning the corner, I saw Coop hunched over the keyboard of an iMac, pounding buttons, squinting at the screen and shouting. "What's going on here?" I asked. "Look at this." Coop pointed to the screen. "Simon says he can help me read better and pass Parks' vocab tests with this thing." I edged closer and investigated. "See, it's like a game. Simon says, if I learn he stuttered to a stop and looked to Glass for help. "Structural analysis," Simon said.
"Yeah."
Coop pounded his forehead with the heel of his hand.
"Structural analysis, structural analysis. I can remember that."
I rubbed my eyes. This couldn't be happening. Coop doing schoolwork on a weekend and...